You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Hello and welcome to this week's Corner House podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Perks, Program and Engagement Director here at Corner House. This week, we're going to give you an early review of the much-anticipated Shame. That's the new film from artist-director Steve McQueen. And joining me to discuss this is our Program Administrator, Rachel Salt, and also our Media and Communications Officer, Elisa Ruff. Later on in the podcast, we'll hear from the Caravan Gallery's Jan Williams and Chris Teasdale, who talked to us about their book, Is Britain Great 3? And as always, we'll be rounding things up with our What's On Guide and our staff recommendation of the week. Let's start with our film focus. Shame is the second feature from Turner Prize and BAFTA-winning artist Steve McQueen. This comes after his first film, the critically acclaimed Hunger, which was about Bobby Sands and the hunger strikes in Northern Ireland in the early 80s. Shame is on very different territory, although I would argue there are similarities between the two films. His leading man is again Michael Fassbender, and this time he's playing a 30-something New Yorker who has a serious sex addiction and a barely functional life as a result. The film really takes off when his sister Sissy comes to visit, and she's played by another well-respected British actor, Carey Mulligan. So I'm going to ask Rachel and Elisa for their initial reactions, and then I'll tell you mine. So let's start with you, Rachel.
It's a bit of a difficult one. Somebody asked me before if I liked the film. I don't know if that's the right word. I enjoyed it, and I thought it was really well made. The performances are absolutely stunning, and it looks great as well. Overall, yeah, I do like it. Like you said, it's a 4 out of 5 film. There's something holding it back, but I still like it.
And Elisa?
I thought it was really great and really well executed. I especially liked Michael and Carrie's acting, which I thought was really good, and also how it tackles with quite a serious subject such as sex addiction, which I think is laughed about quite a lot in society today. But it really showed that this can destroy someone's life and be a really traumatic experience, equally as harsh as drug addiction or alcohol addiction, really.
It is really hard to find the right describing words for a film like this. I did come out thinking, it's amazing, it's beautiful, but of course that's in kind of direct contradiction to the subject matter and the kind of, you know, portrayal of something that really is quite serious and very dark. But it is, without a doubt, a very strong 4 out of 5 star film. I thought it was just absolutely beautiful to watch. I really love Steve McQueen's visual style, and obviously down to the cinematographer as well. But just the kind of pacing is perfect, the way it really sort of dissects this man's life and his kind of how he deals with trauma. To me, it's not actually a film about sex. It's a film about addiction. It's a film about trauma. It's what has happened to this guy and how is he possibly going to recover? And also how his dysfunctional relationships affect him and the people around him, like his sister, Sissy. And it's quite graphic as well. It doesn't really... You know, it doesn't really spare anything. You do get to see a lot. Rachel, how did you react to that?
It's definitely not one for people who are a bit prude. But, like, I think the sex is important to the story, but there's so much more beneath that. And it's graphic in that you see everything, and it is an 18 film, and we've said that in the copy that we wrote about the film. But there's more to it than that. And I think that if you can see past that and you're not a prude, that's great. The sex is key to his development as a character and how you see him dealing with all the issues that he's got. And his sister has a different way of, well, I don't want to give too much away, but she's got a different issue. And they seem to have had a really bad upbringing, but that's not given away. And I think that is one of my problems with it, that you want to know more and you never find that out. And towards the end, it's like, oh, come on, can't you just give a little bit away? So you know that they grew up in New Jersey. He was born in Ireland and they moved over to the States. But yeah, the sex and the graphicness, I think it's to be expected of a McQueen film. So Hunger is graphic in a totally different way. And I think it's got the same visceral power behind it, but in a totally, totally different manner. But yeah, it's there for everyone to see. You can't hold back. It's there right from the first minute of the film.
Elisa, what do you think about that?
I have to agree with Rachel. You know, I wouldn't want my dad sitting next to me whilst watching it. That would feel awkward. And it is very graphic, but it's essential to understanding the main character and understanding how he feels and just how much he's suffering, because there is no end to his constant craving for sex. He watches it on the laptop. He's got millions of porn magazines. He watches it at work. He pays prostitutes for sex. He has sex with random women. And it goes further than that. Again, I don't want to give too much away, but you are going to be shocked when you see it. It really tries to tell you that it is an addiction. Michael Fassbender, in his character as Brandon, goes quite far to explain that it's not even about enjoyment, but it is actually about the pure addiction to sex, and therefore it has to be graphical, and therefore I can really understand why Steve McQueen has filmed it in the way he has.
Yeah, and I mean, I always seem to be the one saying, oh, it wasn't that bad. And I will say again this week, I kind of wasn't shocked. I sort of forgot about it after a while. It didn't really affect me. And I'm not a big fan of, like, watching sex in a full cinema with everyone around. And, you know, I think there's a time and a place. but I do feel like it wasn't that bad, so I don't want that to put anybody off watching the film. And also, Michael Fassbender, I mean, how good was he in this? I mean, I think he was great. I'm not always his biggest fan, but I think in this, it's you know, the perfect part for him. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I think if people I spoke to say, oh yeah, who is he? But I mean, he's been in quite a few films recently, but I really think this is the one that's going to make his mark and people will know him from this. And I mean, he won the Best Actor Award at last week's British Independent Film Awards, and I do think he's on track to get the BAFTA for this one. But for most people, they've probably seen him in Jane Eyre, X-Men, Inglourious Basterds, but this one's definitely the best I've seen from him. His face is absolutely amazing. Everything, his whole emotions just come out in his face. There's one scene at the end of the film and he breaks down in the rain, and it's just absolutely amazing. I wish that had been the final scene, because I think the final little bit ruined it slightly. But yeah, he's absolutely stunning. And Carey Mulligan as well, she's can be a bit annoying sometimes, but I thought she was so mature and really played off him very well.
Okay, yeah, I think this is definitely going to be an award contender for several reasons. And the last thing probably to mention, particularly as we at Corner House, we have our own artist film feature project, is that, of course, Steve McQueen is a very well-known visual artist as well as now a film director. And I really feel like he's probably the best example of a visual artist working in film, because I feel the visual style, the way that he puts together the film, and I don't want to use this to put people off, but to me it was like watching one of the best art installations ever. Something that you can just sort of sit back, the pacing, getting really involved in the content, but also really just kind of the beautiful imagery and the way that often artists' work can make you feel. Elisa, do you agree, or am I talking nonsense here?
No, I completely agree. It is not an American blockbuster type of film. If that's what you're expecting, you might end up being disappointed. There is a lot of meaning behind it, a lot of sadness, a lot of, you know, it does leave your heart a little bit heavy, but it's also beautifully shot. It's very artistic, so I definitely agree. And I think you can really tell, you know, obviously Michael has been starring in Steve McQueen's Hunger as well. And I think they have a really close relationship. I know that Steve has said that he considers Michael to be the best actor ever. And I think you can really tell. And I think Steve probably feels that Michael can bring across Steve's mind, if you know what I mean. He can sort of act what Steve is imagining and portray that onto the screen. So you can tell that there's a really close relationship behind it. And I have to agree, it's beautifully shot. It's amazing.
I know that Steve doesn't actually want to be known as an artist for this one, because we kind of put it in the copy for the event on Friday, and he's very much making his identity as a filmmaker with this film. But I think he's succeeded in that as well, because this one definitely feels like a well-rounded film. However much I like Hunger, it is quite obvious that it was a short artist film that was expanded into a feature film. So whilst there's still the trademark just shots going on for a long time from the same perspective, minimal editing, there's a lot more depth to it this time and a lot more story. And I think he is probably on track to get at least one award from someone, hopefully BAFTA.
Okay, and just finally and quickly, you two, who should come and watch this film?
Not my dad. Not with me.
I don't know, I was thinking, whilst I was watching it, I was thinking people who saw Black Swan, so people who like watching a story about one character and their psychological, and it's the same setting of New York, it had the same kind of feel to it, like New York in winter, and the depths of what one man's mind can go to, I think.
Yeah, I mean, just for me, I guess, just to sweep in, everyone who likes serious and engaging and very well-made films. So obviously at Oscar time, people are searching out these ones. Well, our kind of audiences are anyway. So I would recommend it to anyone who just wants to, you know, think a little bit while going to the cinema, but still be very impressed by the cinematic experience.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would work for most people to see, and I think everybody can learn something from it and take something away from it. So, Dad, you can see it, but just not when I'm in the same cinema as you.
Okay, so thank you, Alisa, and thank you, Rachel. Now, we do have a special Shame preview with Steve McQueen is here at Corner House doing a Q&A with me this Friday, the 9th of December, but I'm afraid it is sold out, so there's a warning to make sure you book your tickets early next time. And we are hoping to post some highlights from the Q&A on our website next week. Shame will return to Corner House on Friday, the 13th of January. If you want to get a taste of the film that we're talking about, catch the trailer on cornerhouse.org.
Art, film, books, food, drink, all at Corner House, Manchester.
It's time for our regular What's On guide. Eurocultured's Christmas exhibition opens on Friday the 9th of December and features prints, paintings and drawings from artists including Matt Sewell, Krek, Guy McKinley and Hamo, whose work you may remember from the Sketch-O-Matic. There'll be original artwork that you can buy for presents, of course, and perhaps if you want something a bit more unusual, you can pre-order your own customised graffiti board. So that's all happening at Unit 4A, 4 Piccadilly Place. For more information, go to eurocultured.com. We've got another Q&A next week, and this one is about the film Sarah Palin, You Betcha. And this is a Q&A with noted documentary filmmaker Nick Broomfield, and that's on Wednesday the 14th of December. So come along and find out about the film, how he made it, and also you might want to talk to him about his previous films like Kurt and Courtney, Biggie and Tupac, and of course Eileen, Life and Death of a Serial Killer. So there's still tickets left, and you want to put your questions to the director, go to cornerhouse.org and book your tickets now. We've also got a new addition to the film programme this week. It's a film called My Week with Marilyn, and Michelle Williams leads an all-star cast in the story of a very small romance between Marilyn and a young production assistant during the filming of the classic 1957 comedy The Prince and the Showgirl. I haven't seen this yet, but I'm very intrigued by Michelle Williams' performance, and I want to see how this film pans out. So it's screening here from Friday the 9th of December, and all the details on our website. Finally, we've got Corner House staff member Chris Daniels here to recommend a workshop for the film project Unravel.
Hello, my name is Chris Paul Daniels. I'm part of Unravel, the longest hand-painted film in Britain. It's a group of five artists who are working directly with 16mm film, and we're running workshops all over the country. We've done about 85, some of them at Tate Britain and the Icon Gallery, and some at little community centres like where I'm from in Maltby in Rotherham. At the workshops, we lay out 16mm film, and everyone gets a chance to draw directly on the film and create animations, so by scratching and marking the film directly. And what we're doing as a project is we're taking every frame of the film as if it equals a metre, and we're measuring Land's End to John O'Groats. So you have 24 frames a second in film, so that'd be 24 metres. When that's all tagged together, it makes a 16-hour film that's going to be a portrait of the country made for and by the people of Britain. So I'm doing a workshop on Thursday the 15th of December at Rogue Studios in Manchester, and that's from 8 o'clock till 9 o'clock on Chapel Town Street, and anyone can come, it's free. There's also an event going on where 11 artists are showing their work as part of a Christmas office party, the event's called, and our website is unravelfilm.blogspot.com. That's got all the details about the project and also about the workshop, so hope to see you there.
You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
At our recent and much enjoyed art night, we were pleased to be joined by Jan Williams and Chris Teasdale, whose very own caravan gallery was parked up outside Corner House. These two roving photographers were here to launch their new book, Is Britain Great 3, which contains poignant and funny observations from the caravan gallery's burgeoning archive of photos. Corner House digital reporter Magabi Turia caught up with Jan and Chris to find out more about their latest book.
You must have met some pretty amazing characters whilst doing the three Is Britain Great books. Where in particular have had the biggest impression on you?
I suppose in terms of volume of interesting people, Margate's pretty good. We had a complete section of the community of interesting people in Margate, from Morris Morris, who rode around on a electric bike with a Polaroid camera taking pictures of us, giving us presents, to quite high profile gallery people that we ran into. So, and there was a mixture in between, but Margate was quite a special place. We haven't been to the Turner Contemporary yet, but I think the Caravan Gallery probably got more attention than that.
What inspired you to make the first Is Britain Great book?
It was a catalogue from our first big exhibition when the Aspects Gallery moved from a place in the centre of Portsmouth to the new development at Gunwolf Quays. We had the opening show there, and they actually made the first book, which is a catalogue for the exhibition. I don't know the difference between a catalogue and a book, but we call it a book and they called it a catalogue. But so that was the first one, and it went down so well, it encouraged us to do more. So yeah,
there's such a mixture in your art between things that are so unique from where they are and things that are uniform, like a Tesco's or a Boots. I mean, do you think Britain is getting more unique or more uniform? Or?
It's difficult. I mean, because everywhere's in flux. At one stage, all the town centres were being turned into exactly the same thing. So there was really nothing for us in the town centres. It was the same design, same shops, same everything. I think town centre planners now have got the message that's not working, and the new Liverpool One development is an example of that, where they've tried to recreate streets and it's been a bit more open. That's very different and interesting. It's still a bit uniform. So where the towns were being redeveloped, we had to sort of go around the edges a little bit more to find interesting things. But there again, every place has got its own character and its own history, and a lot of it has been preserved. Places like the mining villages that used to be, or still works, places that communities have grown up around those industries, and now the industry's gone and the community's there and they don't quite know what to do with themselves, so a shopping centre's moved in, or and they've got a few memorials of what used to be there, and the youngsters don't even know what used to be there. And so that's quite interesting for a different sort of reason. It's a change of use and industry coming and going, which again, it just all needs documenting, and the more we travel around, the more we see, and the more we think, oh, we've got to take pictures of that and record that. So it's just an ongoing process really, and something that we can't see ending.
Do you think the country's changed quite a bit between the first and the third book?
I think quite a lot. We've realised that supermarkets run Britain, mainly Tesco, and loads of places we go to. Gateshead, for example, used to have one of our favourite buildings, the Get Carter car park that was in that film, real kind of brutalist concrete structure. But of course, Tesco bought it and it was deemed too ugly to exist. There's loads of empty shops everywhere, and there was one photo we took of something that looked as if it should have been a public art project by kids, and it was a hoarding painted with basically advertising slogans for Asda all over it. All the small shops in this area were closed down, a great big Asda had moved in opposite.
How have the people that in the places you've been responded to you?
I think they find it quite refreshing to come into the caravan and realize and see things they recognize, or to see something that is familiar but they haven't really thought about before. So very often we'll go to a place and we go in with outsiders' eyes if we haven't been there before, and pick up on things that really leap out to us. And the people who know it say, oh, where's that then? And it turns out they live around the corner from it and they've never really noticed it. So I think what we're about has been a bit thought-provoking. We don't particularly vent opinions. We do sometimes, but we're generally saying, look, we noticed this. What do you think about it?
So it's observational.
Yeah, it's about observation and about trying to provoke a reaction. And very often we'll take a picture of something for whatever reason, stick it on the wall in here. People come in and then they tell us what it is or the story behind it. So it's a two-way thing. It's like a little social club stroke confessional on wheels. And I think we started this project off because it's about taking art to the people. Sounds rather grand, but it's about I think everybody can relate to photography and to images, and there's a lot about recognition and commonality. And sometimes we'll, you know, for example, we'll have someone who's maybe a homeless person and a curator and someone who's just gone out for a pint of milk, and they'll all end up in here just chatting about stuff like they've known each other for years. And I think that's something really special.
So that's Is Britain Great 3. It's available to buy online and from our bookshop, and it's priced £15.
Art, film, books, food, drink. All at Corner House, Manchester.
Now let's go to our staff recommendation of the week. This week we've got a top tip from Corner House Publications Officer James Brady.
This week I'd like to recommend the new Sigur Rós live film called Innie, Fans of the band, I'm pretty sure, will not be disappointed. I'm a bit of a Sigur Rós fan. I haven't got all of their albums, but I'm a real fan of the sound and the aesthetic. It was filmed at the Alexandra Palace over two nights by director Vincent Morissette, who apparently directed Arcade Fire's Black Mirror video. It's just over 70 minutes long, and it's black and white, and it's comprised of nine songs taken from the band's previous five studio albums. Interspersed between each of the songs are these little pieces of colour archival footage, apparently taken from the band's history. They're quite incidental and unexpected and quirky little gestures which break up what's quite actually an austere but very beautiful black and white film. Inni means inside in Icelandic, which will give you a strong hint of the overall focus of the film. It's close and intimate in atmosphere, and it's imbued with a powerful aesthetic of brightness and darkness in equal measure. And I think, like all black and white films should have, it has an almost timeless quality to it. As I said, the true fans of Sigur Rós will not be disappointed. However, it's important to sort of set up a comparison to the earlier Icelandic tour film Haima, which captures the band in their indigenous environment. And although it's a tour documentary, it's very much a heartwarming tribute to the homeland. And people who are into Sigur Rós will get a very strong sense that their sound's deeply rooted in the place that they're from. And it's imbued with the spirit of their vast landscape, the folklore and the traditions that are shared by the close-knit communities that are scattered across the island. However, the new film is very, very different. It couldn't be more different from this. So where Haima is geographical and expansive and warm, a kind of a road tour movie-esque thing, the new film, Inni, is very much more introverted and intimate, and it's very minimal. So Inni is screening here at Corner House on Sunday the 11th of December at 6 p.m. I mean, no doubt that this monochromatic film is going to be superb and a really immersive experience on the big screen, showing Sigur Rós at their best, but also in a new light.
So thank you, James, Chris, and Lisa and Rachel and everyone that's contributed to this podcast this week. That's all we've got time for. Tune in next week when we'll be reviewing the chilling Carol Morley film, Dreams of a Life. In the meantime, you can keep up on Twitter, Facebook, and of course, cornerhouse.org. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Corner House podcast.